Welcome to the Wolfstead Podcast. I'm your host, Casey Dow. From farm to fiber, this is the podcast where we share the stories of shepherds, shears, fiber artists, and more. So if you love all things sheep and wool, this is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I chat with Kaylee from the Buzzard Farm. From falling in love with alpacas to running a fiber arts business, Kaylee shares her journey into fiber farming in Western Pennsylvania. This episode is jam-packed with conversations on alpacas, fiber processing, making, slow fashion, and more. So let's get right into this episode with Kaylee. Thank you so much, Kaylee, for joining me on the podcast. Can you share a little bit about yourself and what led you into the world of fiber farming?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's just wonderful to be able to connect with other, you know, fiber farmers and, you know, fellow makers too. I've been farming for 5 years. In the beginning, I just had chickens and ducks, but I always had the intention of getting alpaca. I grew up in the country and round farm lifestyle, but my parents were more or less city people. So I really didn't know much. I wasn't, like, despite the fact that it was my definite culture, I didn't know much about it. In 2017, I was at a street fair in Ohio, and there was an alpaca farmer there with five of her alpaca. They were white, and she had a tent with tables set up and all the handmade items displayed. And I still have the gloves that I bought there. I spoke with her for actually an hour with my two young kids in tow, which I'm sure you understand is a serious endeavor.
Oh, yes.
I walked away just so enamored by the idea that I could raise these animals and make clothing, which, you know, from my background, I never even gave it a thought before. In Western Pennsylvania, where I live, there aren't any sheep farmers. There aren't any really alpaca farmers. And in Ohio, there's tons of alpaca and sheep farmers, but there just wasn't in the where I was. So I just never thought about the idea of making clothing from animals until that moment. And I know that sounds really obvious, but for me, that was the moment. Like, I left there and I'm like, this is it. We're doing this.
That's awesome. I love those light bulb moments. I feel like we all have those where it just something just clicks.
Yeah, and that was it. And it sounds so silly, like when I look back at it, and I'm like, well, duh, those things were made from animals. But just seeing the animals and seeing the items, I was like, wow.
That's so cool. Yeah, and it is. I think those moments where you see the clothing item, but then you also see the animal, I think it puts you closer. I think that's the process of that, when people can actually see, oh, these are the steps from animal to finished item. So that's so cool that you had that moment there.
Right. And, you know, I had no idea, because, like, they weren't even spinning there. They weren't like doing any processing at all. It was just items on a table. If I would have seen the rest, I may have ran away scared.
So from that moment, was there a process of, okay, you, like, you fell in love with that. Did you have, like, this goal from then to start a farm and raise the alpacas?
Yeah. Well, I started communicating with this farm. I went and I visited their farm, and, like, I could more or less say they were my first mentor.
Mm-hmm.
I go and I'd ask them, you know, 100 questions, and, you know, I knew they weren't going to be doing it for much longer. So I eventually wanted to purchase some alpaca from them. I purchased the property we have here in 2018, which was really crazy, because I actually moved in 2017. I bought my first house in 2017 in the suburbs, and I saw this farm and I was like, welp, guess what? We're moving again. And then we moved here, and then it took a year or so of adjustment, and we got some chickens, and we're just like, I was doing a lot of learning and researching, and then COVID hit, and, you know, it kind of just put a big, like, foot in my plans. But I was at an event at my son's preschool. It was like an outdoor event the summer of COVID. And I, you know, was just mingling with some parents, and I overheard a conversation next to me. It was a friend, you know, like a casual friend, like a acquaintance, I guess, not really a friend. And she was talking about how she had these alpaca and she really kind of wanted to rehome them. And my ears just perked up. And I was like, wait, you have alpaca you want to rehome? I want alpaca and I've wanted alpaca for the last 3 years. And she's like, well, yeah. She's like, do you want these alpaca? And she brought these alpaca to me.
Wow, you were like, what a perfect moment,
Right?
right?
It was actually fate. Like I was like definitely meant to have alpaca.
Yep, it had to be. There was not a coincidence.
No. And I do believe in coincidences, but like there's no denying that that was just like the stars aligned moment. So I started out with her elderly four boys, and I've just grown from there.
So you got these alpaca, and had you learned to process the fiber yet, or spin, or any, had you done any of that before getting them?
No, because alpaca farmers just don't do that. They just don't. They do shows and they outsource a lot of their things that they sell, which I didn't know that at the time. When I went and I saw that vendor, I actually thought everything on the table she made, she didn't make any of it. I don't even think they really knew much about it as far as processing. Now, most alpaca farmers, including the person that I got the alpaca from, which I think she loosely considered herself an alpaca farmer. She actually had them staying with someone else for a lot of the time. I mean, she does some knitting and she had the stuff processed by a mill, and I definitely consider her one, okay? She did a really great job, I think, and she gave me a better perspective on what I could get done. But most of it was like you send it away and you have it come back. But she had like little felted animals from the mill and those types of things that she had shown me before I took the boys on. But no, I didn't learn anything. And it was basically because my mentors didn't know anything and they didn't learn anything. And everything was like, oh, wow, you can't do that. Like, no one does that anymore. That kind of mentality into fiber processing, everyone around me had. So I was like, I went into it and I was like, well, maybe one day I'll learn. Maybe one day I'll figure that out. Probably not. I probably won't do it, right? But maybe one day I'll learn. And I had no idea how to become a farmer because we don't have any mills around us. We don't have anywhere to really mass produce or mass process fiber. So I was like, I don't really know what to do with this. The mill that we had shut down shortly after I got them.
So was that a big pushing point for you to like once you knew, okay, 'cause do alpacas get sheared once a year?
Yes.
Okay, so like when it was time to shear them, was that like a point of like, okay, well, there's not a mill near me, so I'm gonna learn this?
So a lot of things happened kind of all at once. The discovery that all of these farmers outsourced their products and didn't use their fiber, it felt icky to me. I felt lied to, And I'm like, but why? You're like, I asked my question, asked this question, like, why did they do that? Right. And I asked myself this question for quite a few years, and I think we'll get to that later. But that was the driving force to make me want to learn how to process myself. Because asking that question, well, why? Let's see what this really takes to do. And I'm still like, I'm on the other side of like learning, right? And I'm like, okay, I can understand why now because of the amount of work and the amount of love that it takes. And I have a lot more experience behind me now, and I have absolutely no judgment for people who outsource their farmers or outsource. You should absolutely support those farmers because despite the fact that they're outsourcing, they're doing a really big thing just having those animals and keeping this industry alive. They absolutely are. And I think like we have this idea looking at farmers and small businesses that they need to be like making everything from scratch. But it's a big deal to run your own business and it's a big deal to run a farm. My perspective has most definitely gone full circle.
Yeah, it's funny because you have that. I think it's that romanticizing of, especially with social media and what you see. And even for me, before I got sheep, it was, oh, I can't wait to have my own flock. and then, you know, have my own wool and spin and do all of these things. But you're putting a lot of that time and energy of making, you're switching that now into caring for the animal. So there's not as much time for that, you know, processing. So yeah, especially you think about the farms that have a huge flock or a huge herd, it's hard to have all that time to process all that fiber or wool.
Absolutely. Oh, it's incredible. I'm trying to find the balance right now and the solution to that. That's like my huge focus because it's not sustainable to make everything from scratch.
Yeah, and I think it's hard too because these mills are a blessing, but like you said, so many mills have shut down, and so finding a mill that's still like up and running and that's local enough to make sense to take it can be a challenge for some people.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, another thing is a lot of the mills don't process straight alpaca. They will cut it with wool. And I am obsessed with alpaca fiber. I think that's probably putting it like lightly. It sounds dramatic, but I promise it's really not.
Well, is it because the alpaca fiber is so fine? Is that why they usually do it with their machines?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I have never run a fiber mill, but I've talked to other people who do. I've heard that there is one that will, but it's like the shipping of, I don't know, 20 pounds of fiber is so expensive.
Yeah, it's a pretty penny, right?
Yeah, so I feel like unless I'm driving it there, I'm probably not gonna do it. So it's just been an endeavor to make as much of it by hand as humanly possible. Last year, I had five alpaca, I hand crossed, and I used every pound of alpaca fiber that I produced at my farm.
How long did that take you?
Every free second I had.
Because wait, how many pounds does an alpaca, just say your average alpaca, how many pounds do they produce of fiber?
Let's see. I had about six garbage bags full of fiber per animal.
Oh, per animal.
Yes.
Wow.
So my younger animals, it's a lot more. I
Okay.
would say about 7 pounds per animal.
Is that because that's their first shearing?
The first 5 years, you get the biggest harvest.
Okay. And it is it like with sheep where usually those first shearings are the softest too? I
Yes.
mean, alpaca is usually pretty soft in general anyways, but it is softer.
Yes. The first few, the year two, year three is the best quality fiber you will have for an alpaca. The first year, I actually saved because I have two that I got when they were 5 months, 6 months old. Maybe they were seven. They were very young and they looked like babies. And I kept their first shearing for myself. But I like their second shearing more. Like when I process it, when I spin it, it just spins up perfectly. It spins up more even. The first cutting is so fine that it makes it more challenging. And when people tell me who have worked for wool for years that alpaca is more challenging, I would only agree when you're dealing with a first shearing.
Well, and two, did you learn to spin with alpaca?
I did.
Okay. And see, that's so interesting because, like, for you, especially when you're learning it, you know, that's all you've ever known. So, I mean, that's pretty cool for somebody to, like, you know, who's going from wool to alpaca, they're going to find it more challenging. But since you figured out with alpaca, I'm sure you've got it down packed.
Yeah, and you know, and people will come up with all these rules for spinning alpaca and processing alpaca, and I'm like, eh. Like,
Oh,
I
I'm a terrible rule follower. If somebody tells me I can't do something, it makes me want to prove more that
right?
I can't
Right. I think rules are kind of meant to be like it's an art.
it. Yeah.
It's rules are meant to be broken in art. And I think when you put these strict rules on an art, you're just like removing people's artistic ability, I think.
Right. And it can be kind of like I remember when I first got into weaving. Or looking into looms, I wanted a big floor loom because at that time, I had fallen in love with hand woven baby wraps and I wanted to weave my own. And so I knew I needed a big, you need at least a wide loom. You can do it on a rigid heddle, but it has to be wide. But I wanted to go straight to a floor loom, but contacted this lady and she discouraged me so much from doing that. She was like, you do not want to do that. You need to start with this certain type. And I'm like, but I don't want to do that. And like, I want to make a specific thing. And so, you know, just kept looking on Craigslist and finally found one and got it and made that baby wrap. But I think it's easy if you put something into a box that you can discourage people from the actual craft. Like, I think if they're passionate about spinning something certain or knitting or weaving or anything, if they're that gung-ho about doing something, then let them do it. Just don't discourage them if they want to try something.
Right? Like, I totally agree. I have a very specific style, you know? It's an art. Everything I produce is very, like, me. Especially with like the alpaca yarn. When I spin anything else that isn't alpaca, I'm like, eh. Just like,
you've just fallen in love with that.
I won't want to do anything else. I truly just am an alpaca farmer. Well, I got the sheep to make rugs.
Okay, because I was going to ask you. So you have gotten sheep now. So you do have specific things in mind for them.
Yeah, I bought one of those rug guns 2 years ago. They to make like punch rugs.
Okay.
But it's an automatic gun to make them, so you don't have to poke in each individual fiber.
Oh, that is fancy. I have not heard of one of these. And now I'm gonna have to go check this out.
I actually got it as a gift. I don't have a frame for the fabric or anything. They're called a tufting gun.
Okay.
But then I was like, it would be a shame to step on alpaca as a rug. Like, that's how, because I value my alpaca so much, I'm like, it would just be such a shame to turn them into a rug. So we need sheep. That was my logic there. I'm not sure if the logic made sense, especially after all the pain and heartache that sheep are.
Well, see, and I would love to ask you, what are some like major differences since now you have the alpaca and you have sheep? What are some major differences between the two?
Sheep are harder, like, because they're not as hardy. They've been so overbred. And it's funny when I see, like, I'll see, like, Instagram reels where people talk about sheep being hardy, and I just laugh. And I love my sheep, okay? And I would never discourage someone from getting a sheep because they're like little dogs. They're the sweetest, most gentle creatures, and they actually love you. I swear to it. People will tell you that they don't. You know, more traditional farmers, they'll say they only like you for food, but I swear that they love me because they're the sweetest little faces. And the alpaca want nothing to do with you. It couldn't be more opposite. The alpaca want you to go away.
I see. I've heard that. So I was curious what you thought. I've heard that they'll kind of just look at you like, what do you want?
Yeah. Like they're like cats. I like to describe, like, you know, how cats, they like when you're near, but do not touch them. You know what I mean? Like that cat personality. That's the best way I can describe them. Also, sheep eat a lot more than alpaca.
Okay.
Substantially more. It's gonna sound like I hate sheep. It really is, and I don't. So I'm gonna preface with that. I love my sheep. I would never get rid of them. I have a crypt orchid right now that I'm having sent away for surgery, and like I baby them. They are like my children. But like, if I could do it all over, I would have just stayed with alpaca. If I could go back to previous me, I'd be like, look.
Well, are alpaca, do they just seem to be more resistant, like parasite resistant and everything? Okay.
And I think it's the overbreeding, you know, because alpaca have only been in the United States since the 80s.
Oh, okay. I did not know this.
So, you know, you have some of these old breeds. Like, I have baby doll sheep, which are Southden, and they're so old. They have been used for farmers for centuries. And you're going to, like, the worm issues that they've developed are just, we had barber pole worms, and we went to 4 vets. No one could figure it out. And when you have none of the vets can figure it out, what are you going to do? You know, and those are supposed to be your support systems. And I was inexperienced because alpaca, the only real worm issues you have with alpaca are the meningeal worm. And you have to be very, very aware of the meningeal worm. But there's very good telltale symptoms and there's a treatment for it as long as you catch it fast enough.
Okay. Do you do any preventatives for that, or you just watch out for the signs?
Yeah, you can do a monthly ivermectin, and it actually treats for the 30 days prior. It's really important. I've lost an alpaca to meningeal worm. He was older, just, more resistant. So, yeah, but he's like that's the only real concern. But with sheep, it's like anything will kill them.
And I think with two, they are so good at hiding it. It's, yeah, it can be a challenge.
Absolutely. And I love them. But like I had an alpaca last year who had pneumonia, and it was like four doses of antibiotics, and he was just solid, right? Now I feel like if that was a sheep, and this is hypothetical, it would have been 3 or 4 months of recovery. It just seems like once they go down and once they're weaker, they stay weaker longer than an alpaca would. No, my alpaca boy, this is Mac, he's my favorite. He still seems weaker, because once they get sick, they're always a little weaker, but not the way that you get from other livestock, at least from my experience, right? Which is limited. I feel like I could be learning about farming every day for the rest of my life and
Oh,
never learn at
farming,
all.
it's like that is my main thing. Like, I love talking to other people because you never stop learning. You just don't, because
No.
there's always something to learn for sure. So, all right, I want to jump into your soul to garment mission. And were you like aware of the slow fashion movement before getting alpaca? Like, how did that all come to be?
So I've always done sustainable practices. Like I did cloth diapering. I use cloth napkins. I, can and, did like general homesteading practices. And I've done this since my kids were little. My oldest is about to be 11. So they're just in my daily routine now, right? About 9 years ago, I started a clothing swap, and it didn't take off because it really wasn't, like, I guess, cool then to do those kinds of things. But I've always been more into using what's already there, other than, buying new. So I guess, like, the foundation was there. And then I was trying to discover what I wanted to do with the fiber farm. Like, I had the alpaca. I wasn't quite ready for them yet when they came here because I didn't really know what I was going to do. And then this like slow fashion label just kind of fell in my lap. And I'm like, wow, that just kind of hits everything I already believe. And this is a way to put one thing I'm really passionate about with this other thing I'm really passionate about.
And so, is this kind of the mission behind your farm of you're wanting to take all of this fiber and turn it into garments and sell? What would you say?
So when I started fiber farming, I didn't have any of this information about what fiber farmers do. And like I said before, alpaca farmers, they outsource, and it's all made in Peru. And obviously, I was really uncomfortable about that. And I was really shocked. And this inspired me to create this more sustainable model. And I said earlier, and this is what I said, we'll get to this earlier. The question I asked was, why are these farmers outsourcing? Well, the reason is because there's not enough time in the day, like we established. But then how do we solve this problem? Well, we need to incorporate machines. We need to incorporate knitting machines. We need to incorporate industrial machinery. And we need a way to make that affordable because right now, a mini mill is $250,000. So my goal is to find a way to make this sustainable so we can have a local textile economy. So I'm starting to get some minor processing equipment. I joke and I say I want to be BABA. Do you know who BABA is?
Please explain, because I think I know, but I don't know for sure.
Because when I didn't know that BABA existed because I'm in my own little farm corner of the world, and I try to pay attention to slow fashion things, but I'm busy. I'm farming. So BABA is a Spanish company that essentially uses my model, but in real life, and they I mean, they at least peer, like they do it well and successfully. They take their they outsource everything. So basically they're just a company. So they buy the wool from a farmer and then they have it processed at a local mill. But then they have a factory that has just people with knitting machines. Like what is it? The LH, the old style, but they have a new, they're Japanese.
Okay.
Anyway, but they manufacture these sweaters with a knitting machine, and they have one product essentially, and that's these sweaters. And they're like globally famous from doing this, and they make them with local wool. That's my dream. If I could do anything, it would be that. And I don't want to produce all the fiber myself because, for one, I don't believe that supports the fiber economy as a whole. I want to be able to pull other farmers into this. For two, you really shouldn't expect to be able to do everything on your own. That's just not
Yes.
realistic.
There's not enough hours in the day.
No, there really isn't. And for three, animals are so expensive and they are like 99% of my cost up front.
Oh,
And
for sure. Like me and my husband were just talking about the hay bill the other day. And he was like, "How are we spending this much money in hay? You could have bought so much yarn with this
right?
already." And I'm like, "But that's not the point."
It's not a sustainable model
Yeah.
at all. I don't even like the vet bills alone that I have some years. I'm like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, and I'm so thankful. Like what you're saying, I think there's been such a big movement, and we're slowly working towards it, of these outlets coming about, like the Shave 'Em to Save 'Em with the Livestock Conservancy, and just all these programs that are helping get the word out about fiber farmers and being able, like, showing people what really goes into it and making a market so they can continue to do what they love.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think we're just slowly, we just got to keep combining our efforts together and keep working towards that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of time and energy and love goes into all of that. But yeah, I think what you're saying, like, we can't do it ourselves. We've got to, like, work together.
Yeah, it's a community effort. And another thing I asked myself, right? Like with the other question is the farmers, when they were at these farmers markets and, you know, events, were lying about these products, saying that they produced them on their farm. Well, not directly lying, but definitely not telling the truth and definitely insinuating that these outsourced products were from their animals. So I asked, why are they feeling like they have to lie? And it's like the public perception on textile products is that they won't buy something handmade for that price unless they know that you have worked incredibly hard for it. And I think that is just so unfair. And we're never going to have a local textile economy if that's the way the public sees fiber farmers and sees textile workers, because we don't deserve to like literally work ourselves to death to produce products for people. No one should be doing that.
Yeah, everything that goes into it. It's a lot.
It is. And the risk and the dirt and
Yes.
it's so much.
Well, like, let's jump into that. So, what is a typical day? Your ideal, let's go with ideal day, because we know with farms and livestock, every day is different and crazy. And with children, you add children on top of that, just all the things. But what is your, like, ideal day on the farm look like?
So, you know, right now I'm in this big transition mode. My kids are in a cyber school and I've actually taken my one out and I'm like solely homeschooling her. Do you homeschool?
Yep, I homeschool.
Yeah. Well, my daughter doesn't have the personality for it. She's just more challenging to motivate. So, we're in an adjustment period, right? We'll get there. It's
Right.
as far as anything in life, you just keep working through it, right?
Right.
And, you know, the one thing it's like, and I'll say this with farming, as far as because I feel like this just goes with all aspects of like homesteading and this kind of life, is like you always think you can't do it and then you do it and you get through it, right?
Oh yeah, you just it's like a perseverance thing. You figure out what works and what doesn't work, and it yeah.
Yeah. So right now I'm actually going out to do my farm chores a lot later because I'm trying to motivate her. But normally I have my coffee and I go out and I take care of my chickens and ducks. I have about 50 chickens and ducks total. That and your ducks need lots of water. So it's like a lot of filling waters and, gathering hay bales. I think I have 5 sheep and 7 alpaca, and between them they have a bale and a half, a square bale per day that they consume. A lot of just feeding waters, doing health checks, making sure that their hooves and their toes are in decent condition, filling minerals, filling baking soda, making sure everyone's good. But it's actually really easy. It's just that I can't leave during the day because I always have to monitor, make sure everyone's okay. And I always have to be home at a certain time at night. I do lock all the alpaca and sheep away. Every night, we have lots of coyotes here, and both alpaca and sheep are prey animals. And you'll see things online that say alpaca can be guard animals. They are not guard animals. They are prey animals. They are ruminants, and they will be taken down by a coyote. And we also have black bears, so I'm very protective about my animals. And yeah, it's like day to day is really easy. It's when it's not easy. It's when, we have a health issue, and it's sometimes it's once a month. Sometimes we have 2 or 3 months and everything's fine. But that's when things get hard. And, it's not normal hard. It's really hard. Like one of the hardest things I've ever done hard.
It can be so time consuming when you have an animal that's sick and you're having to go out there multiple times a day to help them.
And we had an alpaca that we had to he was down, and the only way we were gonna save him, which we didn't save him, was to make a sling for him so he could stand. Because once alpaca are down, if you don't sling them and they stay down for multiple days, they're not getting back up. So I had to make a sling, but he weighs 200 pounds. I had to lift him up several times a day to put in this sling.
Talk about a workout, right?
And some days that's my every day. Like some days, I told a friend earlier today, I was like, I can't wrestle my one sheep down anymore if I need to, do anything with him. And that's how I know he weighs over 200 pounds, because that's how much my alpaca weigh, and I can still wrestle them down.
Those sheep, I'm telling you, they can get like big real quick.
And they don't look big.
I
The alpaca
know.
look huge.
Yeah, it's funny because they're way stronger than you. Like you're looking at them and you're like, "Oh, I can turn them up, real easy and trim their hooves or whatever you need to do." And it's like, "Oh, no, that was a little harder than I anticipated."
And they get really dirty. Like really, really dirty. Like they don't care what they lay in.
Now, okay, here's a question. Why do alpacas, they kind of like do a dust bathe? Is there a reason that they roll and everything like that?
Is to keep themselves clean. Like
Okay.
that's how they get things out of their fiber. They're very clean animals. Like processing them is really dusty because they're rolling in dust, but it's
Right.
nothing like processing wool. I very rarely find chunks of poop or like chunks of just soiled, because the undersides of my sheep are just soiled.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
I'm not going to be able to use much of any of that other than for compost. But the alpaca, you can use everything on shearing.
Oh, so you really don't have a lot, like what you're saying. Like, there's certain parts of the sheep, their chest area sometimes it will get felted, or yeah, their underside or their thigh. Sometimes you can't really, what you're saying, like use it for compost or something like that. But so you're like, for the alpacas, you're pretty much getting 100% of that.
Yes, you're getting 100% of that
Wow.
because they take care of themselves so much better.
Okay.
And now, like you're not gonna want to spin their leg hairs, but I use it for felting.
Right.
It's all usable, it's all cleanable, but some of the sheep, the wool, especially on the stomach, it's not cleanable.
It makes a perfect compost, but you might not want it for yarn. You
Right,
still
exactly.
need
And
it
there's
clean.
plenty on the rest of them.
Yeah. So, kind of leads me into this question. What is your favorite clothing item that you've made so far?
All right, my hands down favorite clothing items are hats. I love hats. I've always loved hats. I make a really basic hat that I sell, but I'll make more intricate hats for, myself and my family. Even before I made things, I really treasured a good knit hat. They're just so practical
Yeah.
and they're fast, so I love to make them.
Now, are you using like what you were saying, and you're investing in equipment? Are you using a knitting machine for those?
I do sometimes, but not all the time. And I do like a hybrid because you see, hand spun yarn in machines, they don't get along very well.
Oh yeah, I didn't wouldn't think of that. Do they catch a lot?
Sometimes. So there's like an art to it for sure that I kind of have down, and you have to be a pretty experienced spinner to do it and have it work out. So that's the, I'm able to do it, but it also gives you kind of a boring hat if that's all you're doing. So I try to cut corners and use it when I can, but also I know based upon being a knitter now that I want the quality to be there, just like it would be 100% hand knit. So having a hybrid model has been the best case scenario.
So, what you're making, are you selling hats? And then what else are you selling?
So I'm doing hats. I will probably end up doing fingerless gloves, and I do wool dryer balls.
Okay. And you have like a custom, like people can reach out to you to get like custom hats and stuff done, right, on your website.
Yeah. I have it set up like a waiting list.
Okay.
Typically, I have, a few in queue. This time of year, it kind of slows down because we're going into the warmer months, But yeah, and I do them with like natural colors of the alpaca. I blend the colors together. I don't use any dyes.
Is that your preference? Do you prefer working with the natural colors versus something dyed?
Yeah, I do. But yeah, my goal is to be able to produce sweaters. I do not think that that's going to happen while my kids are young.
Right. Yeah. There, it's so nice to have goals that are for now, like in this time period goals, and then those future goals of like, I can't take that on right now, but in 5 or 10 years, like
Yep.
I'm gonna give it a shot. I'm working towards it, right?
Exactly. And like, so taking on smaller projects just fits my lifestyle better, but then I still feel like I can keep the momentum going, as well as like partnering I partnered with the New England Fiber Pool, and I'm all about fiber pools. I think they're fantastic. What they do is they process it and then they sell products back to farmers that are USA made. So it's a really great way of farmers to have USA made alpaca with USA grown alpaca to give to their customers that is ethically made. That is why like I love like there's a few in the United States. There's the New England Fiber Shed. I mean, it's Fiber Pool, sorry, not Fiber Shed. And then Imperial Yarn.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I didn't know about those.
Yeah, it's great to be able to have an actual sustainable fabric that is produced here. And there's nothing against like practices in other places, but there's a sustainability factor if you're not supporting your regional economy.
Yeah, and like what you were saying, ethical.
Yeah, and there's so much. I could have an entire podcast just on the ethics of what fashion is.
All right, well, let's jump into like this question. There's so many different ways you can go about it, but what is one of your favorite things about fiber farming? Because I'm sure you have plenty, but just one of them. And then what is one piece of advice that you would give someone who would like to start fiber farming?
So the best part is the breakup in the day, that break. I go out 2 or 3 times a day just to make sure that they have hay, especially this time of year because it's before shearing and I'm trying to up their fiber growth. I have small kids and I homeschool and life is just so busy and chaotic. And just that time I get to step outside, it's like a reason to go out where I feel like if I wasn't in this life, I would be inside all day. It's just kind of spinning in the chaos. And it breaks everything up and kind of gives me a reset several times during the day.
Oh my goodness. I was literally, I feel like I just said this, but I was literally having this conversation with my husband just like 2 nights ago. And so it is, it's that, it's such a good break and getting the fresh air and just, yeah, I couldn't agree more.
It's wonderful. It's every morning I'm like, I'm starting my day out exactly the way I want to because I'm out here and I'm doing this. And it's like, the sacrifices we make in motherhood, and it's like that one thing I don't have to sacrifice, and that's really wonderful. And I feel so fortunate.
And then, what is one piece of advice that you would give someone to get started fiber farming?
Well, don't start with sheep. Which and read lots of books about proper grazing before. And I think everyone's gonna have a different experience with sheep, right? Like I did. I had everything that could have possibly bad have happened in 6 months happen.
Yeah. And I think it too, it comes down to like what you said, because you started with alpaca and you learned to spin on their fiber, where like in my situation, I started with sheep. So you kind of figure that out. So like, yeah, everyone's story is going to be a little bit different.
Absolutely. But like I think as far as choosing livestock, choosing what you're going to start out with fiber, my advice would be to go with your gut, right? Don't listen to, because there's going to be a lot of people who tell you, "Oh, do it this way, do it that way." And you don't have to listen to any of those people. The best resources are like Vogue for Knitting. And there's tons of like amazing hand spinner books. And 100% the videos by Ashford. Those are all fantastic. They help me learn everything. I self-taught everything. I've never taken any classes. And it was all from online resources that I got from either buying equipment, talking to people and them suggesting books. And that's been fantastic. But as far as the sheep and the animals, choosing the hardiest animal you can get as your first animal, like your first livestock animal, say you have absolutely no animals, no experience with ruminants, choose the hardiest one and then go from there. Because your first year, you're going to learn so much, especially if you've never had livestock before. And to not have to deal with the health problems of a more sensitive animal will help you learn this in a less like chaotic way. Because everyone's going to make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes, lots of mistakes. It doesn't matter how many mentors you have. It doesn't matter how many books you've read. The stakes are high with livestock, and nobody's perfect. So, be easy on yourself and choose an animal that's a bit easier.
Yeah, and like what we were saying, like you're gonna be constantly learning. Just when you think you've got something figured out, watch out, 'cause you're gonna have something else to figure out.
Yeah. It is the most humbling thing I have ever done.
Oh, for sure.
I know absolutely nothing. I
Yep, that's me. I'm like, please, everyone, tell me all your secrets.
it's funny because at one some point I'm like, oh wow, like I might be an industry expert now, right? Because I've learned so much so quickly because I was so much ha happened to me so fast. Where you could have a farm for 5 or 10 years and never go through that many health issues to where you really get the experience. And I'm at the point where I'm like saving my neighbor's livestock. And I'm like, oh my goodness, is this where I became a real farmer? Is this my moment? I'm like, no, I'm not even going to say it because something
Yeah,
bad will
don't say
happen.
anything.
Happen today.
Yep. Farming is definitely so humbling.
So humbling, so humbling.
I've enjoyed so much talking to you. This has been so much fun.
Oh, I agree. Thank you.
Well, before we go, if you want to just share really quick where everyone can find you and all of that, in case people want to get in touch and follow you on Instagram, because you put so much informative and good information on your Instagram.
I appreciate that so much. The Instagram part of it and the internet and the social media aspect of it is just as much work, I feel like, if not more work, than the actual farming aspect of it. Maybe not physically, but certainly mentally. marketing is 50% of my job, and getting the name out there and a simple like and share and follow just means that everything to a small business or a small farm or even like an advocate or anyone like that. My Instagram handle is Fiber in the Foothills. It is the exact same thing on TikTok. Right now, I am on an Instagram hiatus. So the best way to reach me is actually through email. My website is the Buzzard Farm. That's with 2 Z's.com. And you can message me through there. I will answer that so quickly because I get notifications on my phone. And yeah, that's about it.
I love it. And yeah, I think we all need to take those hiatuses every once in a while because it can be mentally draining. And we got to kind of reset and refocus. So
yeah, you know, it's wonderful. I actually said I wouldn't be where I'm at if it wasn't for social media. Like, confidence wise, it's given me so much. It is fantastic. But you know, being here with my kids, there has to be some sort of balance, just like with anything in life, right?
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for everyone and everything and the whole world that is like built on the internet.
Yeah. Well, thank you again so much for joining me today. And yes, everyone go check out and email her and check out all her good stuff.
Thank you so much. It was great talking with you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to today's episode. To check out more episodes and sheep content, you can head over to thewoolstead.com. Until next time.